Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm thrilled to be sitting down with Jeff Kinsberg and Christy Richards here in their own studio of Jack Talk. They're a husband and wife team behind Jack Tool, one of Northeast's premier engineering product development and precision prototyping firms. Over the last 25 years, Jack Tool has built an incredible reputation for helping defense, medical device, and industrial manufacturers turn complex ideas into precise, high-performance solutions, from concept to prototype to production. Jeff founded Jack Tool with a vision to push the limits of engineering innovation, while Christy, as president and CEO, has helped transform that vision into structure, process, and sustained growth. Together, they've built not just a company, but a culture grounded in learning, trust, and collaboration. Jeff, Christy, thanks so much for having me here. It's great to have you on and to finally have this conversation because we've been talking about it for some time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.
Awesome. Hey, let's start with the origin story. You've grown Jack Tool from a one-person shop to a premier engineering firm. When you look back, what was that moment that you realized that it wasn't just a business, it was more of a calling, or not just a job, but something more?
I realized that, I'll backtrack. Ed, thank you. No, serious. Thanks for having us. It's great to be a part of your show.
And totally.
Known you for many years and appreciate the opportunity.
Of course.
What was the moment? The moment was, I realized that what I took for granted or what I know or what I was passionate about doing was in demand. And it had a lot of purpose and that I could really help people. People were calling me up saying, can you help me do this? And I'm like, there's got to be somebody better than me. And it was no. And that was a moment of maybe maturity or just, holy cow, I am the next person in the chain to move this type of business, this industry forward.
Mm. So roughly how old were you, Jeff, when you started to come to terms with, hey, this could be something?
The moment was 2006.
Okay.
And at the time, I was doing this full time already, but I didn't realize the impact it had on people. And I was transitioning out of the model hobby products that we were making, that we got started with, starting to do the aerospace, defense, medical stuff, but was still weaning off the model hobby stuff. Used to go to a few trade shows, and a person at the time in their 70s kept coming and buying my products. This was biannual, so every 6 months I'd see this guy. And he'd buy the same thing for me over and over. And this was like a durable item. And one day I said to him, I'm like, I can't remember his name. I think it was Carl. I'm like, I don't understand. Why? You can't possibly need these. Where are the ones you just bought? And he says to me something to the effect of, we're in a room where people are selling model hobby products, mainly trains. Big room. He says, if you look around the room, there's no new blood coming into the industry. Everybody's aging out. There's no innovation. It's the same faces. And he says, I'm an old guy. I'm not going to be here forever. I can do whatever I want to do with my money. I believe in you. I'm investing in you. It doesn't matter what I do with these. Take my money. Hmm. And that was a moment where I was like, holy cow. Like, just holy cow. I don't know this person. He sees something. And that was inspiring.
That's awesome. Do you still like trains?
I like trains.
All right. That's amazing. So, Christy, then along came you. I think full-time around 2014?
2014.
Okay. You stepped into eventually the CEO role. Just talk about that for a minute. What made that the right moment for you and for Jack Tool that you'd come into this entity?
Sure. In 2014, I believe Jack Tool was about five individuals, two of those who were interns, and one had just decided to go on and pursue other career avenue in bigger industry. Mm-hmm. And Jack Tool was just awarded its first major contract. The timing was really ripe to jump in and help out and bring some support structure to the business. I wasn't going to fill the shoes of the individual who left, but it would leave Jeff able to step in and really work his talents and skills and push the contract and the project forward. For myself at that time, I had been working about 12, 13 years in med devices. It was a great experience. I was in design, development, engineering, and then transitioned into kind of more of the business, the procurement end. So I'd had a good set of experiences, background, that really lent itself well to, I think, the where Jack Tool was in terms of understanding the, we'll say, the mechanisms that needed to be put in place to help it take that next step forward.
Awesome.
Maturity.
Talk about that, and I'll open this to either one of you. What did that conversation look like in 2014? Was it you saying, I need help, or was it...
Do you want to tell it from, tell it from my perspective? She was the person who left. I'm still friends with. We talk every few months. And I just remember sitting in his office. He was with me for 5 years, sitting in his office. And it was a moment for him of, I need to pull the eject handle. I'm sorry, Jeff, but I have other things. And I'm like, and my mind was like, okay, that's wonderful. But now I have to think about what I got to do next. And he is mid-sentence, like mid-speech of what he's doing next in his career. And I'm sure he'll watch this. And I haven't ever told you this part. But all I'm thinking is I can't control that part, right? All I can control is what I do next. So he's midway through giving me his a moving on speech. And I'm like, I got to call Christy at work. She needs to quit. And I called her up and I was basically like, you need to quit.
So Christy, had the two of you floated that concept before that moment? Or was that like when you got that call, you're like, oh, okay.
I feel like the business had always been such a big part of both of our lives. It was in our garage and then it was in a bigger garage in the backyard. And I felt like I was already part of it. So it was, I don't know if we'd ever spoke about it directly.
No.
Okay.
But it felt like a natural next step.
So by virtue of just it being around, you had exposure to it across all those years already. You knew what was going on. And okay.
And I think just the, I guess living in kind of that entrepreneurial household was not new. Mm-hmm. My father had his own business. He had a shop in our garage at home. Okay. And so the environment was comfortable.
Understood. And it's been echoed by a lot of our guests how powerful, and sometimes we don't even realize that influence of a familial member and a parent might be, even if we're not directly in the business, we're watching them and we're picking up those cues, and that's shaping what we see and what we do, whether it be conscious or subconscious.
Yeah.
So certainly that probably helped. And I know you were fairly influenced by your dad as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, and I still have him. He's still out there. He comes to our weekly BD meetings and harasses the team. But as I've gotten older, I've really come to appreciate what I picked up through osmosis, because you can't learn that.
No. And now you two with not young, but younger
teenagers,
kids, they're watching now. Have they come to the Jack Tool? Have been on premise?
They have.
All right.
Even made her debut as an employee this summer.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Start them young.
Debut.
As long as they know
it's her debut, but she really wants to work at Duncan.
Okay. That may change. We'll see. That's funny. You define your roles in the EOS model, and we've had a few EOS implementers on the program, as visionary and integrator. Talk about how that dynamic works in practice, both in that you are both business partners in this venture, but also husband and wife. Talk about that for a minute. I'll open that up to you, Christy.
I believe we were introduced to EOS through a woman in business initiative through Rutgers. So it was rolled out to the community as check out this resource and see if it fits your business. If it does, you can learn more about the process. And kind of as I looked into it more, the toolbox that it provides made a lot of sense. All of the tools weren't necessarily new, but just put together, they really created a common vocabulary and a common, we'll say, set of steps that everyone could get behind and take. Mm-hmm. And learning more about the visionary and the integrator role sounded very familiar to how Jeff and I worked mm-hmm. already. And it just put a name and a vocabulary to what that was and to how we might work better together and work better together with our leadership team. Him being the founder and having kind of those longer ranging ideas and aspirations of where the company could go. And I was always more on the side of what do we need to get there and being very appreciative of that end goal or guidance to reach for.
Understood. So when Christy came to you and said, hey, let's check out this thing called EOS, what was your response to that?
Supportive.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Are you joking? No, I don't remember, but I've said to her multiple times, both a visionary and an integrator are both critical. And it is equally difficult to do those roles. The business, before we went down the path of EOS, I don't want to say plateaued, but it was what you get with a lot of small mom and pop businesses where you wear a lot of hats. It's not work smarter, it's work harder. And you got this crazy machine design around you. And we had agreed with the leadership team that the goal is to continue to grow. Well, without EOS, we're not going to grow. Without a structure, we're not going to grow. Or one of us is going to have a heart attack. Now, is it panacea? Does it solve everything? No. There's still, you know, the process is the process, but you need to interpret the inputs and outputs of the process. That comes with experience, and it's always changing. Things that we did just since implementing EOS, I'm like, man, I wish I knew. And it's okay. We're not beating ourselves up, but you just got to understand that it's always fluid.
True. And knowing the EOS process, and our Delia Associates runs on EOS, and we took a little bit of a sabbatical around COVID as everything was chaotic, and have come back to it. And the experience for me has been like, why did we go away from it? Mm-hmm. Like, we found that before EOS, I thought of it as putting things under the rug that you don't want to deal with. And then you'd come into my office and say, Ed, why is your rug sitting 25 feet off the floor? I'm like, because there's a lot of stuff under the rug.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
It doesn't go under the rug anymore.
Yeah, I think especially in an engineering firm or a firm where we've got a bunch of, pardon my French, but techno nerds. Right. These are not, for the most part, these are not extrovert, high talkers, in your face, comfortable with the unknown folks. They're engineers, for better or for worse. And I still identify as an engineer. And it's very easy to placate and push under the rug hard conversations. But man, once you get comfortable with it, it is the most liberating thing ever.
For sure. So let's talk about another we touched on. And clearly the two of you are making it work. And it's not for everyone. And that's working in business with your spouse. So talk about for a minute what you've learned about balancing the two, like balancing business life, personal life. And how do you do that? How do you keep one from overtaking the other? Do you formally draw the line and say, we're on family time, we don't, or is it fluid? Just talk about how that dynamic works between the two of you, if you would. Chris, you want to take that one?
I could start. To your point, there's a very fuzzy gray line, but I was thinking about that because we talk about this a lot and we talk about this with our girls, and we've got a lot of external, we'll say, resources, counselors that we speak with as well, just to try to balance things out and get perspective, because we're not the only people going through this, I hope.
This is not unique.
No.
But in some ways, and I'm terrible with sports analogies, but it's like home game and away game. And it's whether we're home or away, it's still the most important part is communicating with each other and being able to anticipate each other's moves and actions and motivations on the field. But it's still the same plays that we're doing, and it's still the same team. And so there is a lot of overlap, a lot of, we'll say, conversations that start in one place and end the other. But we've got the understanding that, like, deep down fundamentally, that we are each other's team, and that's the most important thing for us to succeed.
Awesome. Jeff, how would you follow that up?
She described it well. Okay. So it's not having this idea of boundaries in a specific time or place has not worked well, because there's always going to be moments of, we need to discuss this now, whether it's family or work or something else. What we've established is a way of communicating and inviting each other into the moment. I can be very, what's the word?
Verbose? I don't know.
Sure. I can be that and very aggressive. Mm. And it can shut anyone down if I come off the wrong way. So it's, and it goes both ways. Hey, I need that. She wants to have a conversation. I want to have a conversation. This is on my mind. Do you have bandwidth now? Do we want to do this later? And it's not, so part of it is just knowing you got to pause. A conversation is two ways, so there needs to be an invitation. The other person needs to be ready to have the conversation. I might be, like, my kettle pot might be boiling over and she's, leave me alone. This is my time. So that's how we make it work. It's knowing how to communicate with each other. And sometimes we know we go out to dinner and the goal is to not talk work. Sometimes it is to talk work. Sometimes we're talking work and I'm like, this is going to be a heavy conversation. I don't want to go down this path right now. And she gets it. We both respect that boundary.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, at the core, it sounds like you always have been great at communicating with each other. Clearly,
you know. Great. It's hard work.
Yeah.
There's a lot of coaching that goes on to do this. A lot of, I don't know, just understanding, because I need to communicate in a way that she's receptive to and vice versa. So it takes time to learn that.
It takes an effort. It's just like any other practice. Mm-hmm. Well, athletes don't show up and play. They practice hours before.
Right.
And there's always something to learn.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And I think what's spectacular is there's this concept from, I'm sure it's from a lot of different curriculum, but from strategic coach called in the problem. This is Dan Sullivan, in the problem versus on the problem. Mm-hmm. And when we're both in the problem, very difficult to really solve it. So let's say we're at dinner and both of our heads are like spinning. We're both in the same problem. The best is our girls will be like, Mom, Dad, we've heard this before. You know what you have to do. Can you just do this so we can have dinner? And you're like, oh my God, you're right. Yeah.
That's funny. I'm thinking about my own kids and some of their exposures. And sadly, I think both of them are, I think I'm the reason why they don't want to come to work at D'Elia Associates.
Mm-hmm. Too.
Yeah. So let me touch on something else that's near and dear to both of you, core values. Mm-hmm. Now they are, I saw in your break room, they are words on the wall, but I think here they're more than words on the wall. So I think they mean a lot more to you. So talk about that for a moment, how you came to define them and how they're really serving to guide the organization now and moving forward.
So again, core values. So the businesses are living organisms. They're living things. They're always changing through different states. And what makes them change is the people that are there. It was very easy, or was easier when we were enough people that could fit into one car to go to lunch, right? Or if there's a cafeteria on the campus, we would all walk down together, 5-10 of us, and you get everyone's pulse of what's going on. You start to create leadership. Leadership hires more people. I don't have the pulse, right? I am the visionary. I set the cadence of where we're going, why we're going there. For all intents and purposes, it's my bus. I can paint it whatever color I want. So we scaled through COVID, knock on wood, We continued to hire. And 21-22 timeframe, we looked back, and in just a few short years, we had doubled the size of the staff without any real thought or strategy put into who are we hiring? I want an engineer. I want an engineer. I want a technician. But who are they? What is their why? What is their purpose? And look, and you got to figure out, this is, not to sound rude, but this is not a democracy, right? This is a vision, a business. This isn't the government. It's not that everyone has a vote. We can be fair, but it's just like any sports team, right? We're all wearing the same uniform with the same purpose that day. If you want to wear a different uniform, go somewhere else, respectfully. So we had grown, we had doubled, and we started to see we were not mature enough as a organization to have doubled so quickly. And there was some heartburn over just, we'd have our leadership huddle and we didn't all see eye to eye, and there was a lot of friction, and I wasn't, and I'll speak for myself, I wasn't mature enough to handle all of the friction and some of the conversations. And we got to the what makes this work. And at the time, there were 6 people on the leadership team. Ebbs and flows. And that's why there's 6 core values. We all racked and stacked of what it meant to our why, what makes us special unicorns. Mm-hmm. And that's where it came from.
Cool.
And we train on them. We celebrate based on them. We bring it into the full 360 of, if our customers don't exude these values, if this doesn't mean anything to you, this is not going to be a good fit. Same thing with our suppliers. If everybody makes mistakes. If we can't trust you enough to not ship us your mistake or pass something off, this is not going to work.
Yeah. That's great. I want to go back a little bit in time, because I've been thinking about, so the way that you came into the business, Christine, 14, key person moved on. Jeff reached out, said, hey, I think it's time. And it sounds like you stepped into that role with a healthy degree of confidence, confidence in your relationship, confidence in where the business was, where it could go. What was, like, if you could look back, that first mm-hmm. moment where you said, yeah, this was a good idea? Because mm-hmm. a lot of times you hear about husband-wife teams, they come together, they go forward in business. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But was there a moment you could look back to where you said something that may have happened or occurred, or a moment where it just clicked for you and said, this was a good idea? This is what we're going to do.
Has that moment occurred?
I'm trying to think of a specific moment, but honestly, I think I jumped in that my role in those first few years shifted over time, right? I jumped in and started taking over a lot of the more of the administrative responsibilities that Jeff had.
Business systems.
The business systems, we'll mm-hmm. say, that so that he could do more of the engineering, working with the customer. And I feel like it was always something new in some way to grow the business, right? Definitely in a growth mode from that point forward, right? We went from, we'll say, the 5 people in 2014 to, what?
Say 20 in 2020.
20 in 2020. Sure. So we were always like looking for that next step of growth. And we went from occupying half of this building to taking up more space. And so I don't think there was any single moment along that journey that necessarily confirmed my choice to join, other than that I didn't really look back.
So it was just a build. It just kept going. This is a good thing. It just keeps being good. So we're going to stay the course. It just felt right. How would you follow that up, Jeff? Was there a moment where you said, hey, this was great, or this is great, or did it just seem that way right out of the gate?
What did I do?
No, Christy is much stronger at me with the business systems, the rigor that goes into our processes. I've got a little bit of integrator in me, that the business needed something for the first, we'll say, 15 years, right, to get to that point. But I don't want to slow down. I want to just have the vision and run towards it. So we have incredible, we'll just call them badges of accomplishments, mm-hmm. that we would not have if it wasn't for Christy and Caitlin and the team. And there's just different folks. And to go into that a little bit more, 10, 15 years ago, I wanted to get to know some of my customer base better. So I joined a professional organization that was government contracting officers. And I went to a seminar with them where it was myself, one other contractor, and 30, 40 people from Army Contracting Command, New Jersey. I think the seminar was something titled How to Handle Friction in the Workplace. But before we went to the seminar, the speaker made us do a survey. I don't remember what it was called, but like a Colby survey or something like this. A
disc or something like that.
Yeah. But I think it was actually a brain dominance type thing.
Sure.
And everybody in the room, so that they put the stats up, not calling anyone out. And they go, everybody in this room fits this model, except for one person. I'm serious. And I was like, holy cow. And that was me. I can't fake it. I'd say that being...
Did they ask you to leave or were you allowed to stay?
No, nobody asked me to leave. Okay. But I felt so special because I was different. And I thought different in a good way. But you realize that everyone has natural strengths. And it's a matter of accepting that people have certain unique abilities, going to that spot, and that's your lane. And we get along really well because of the trust and the communication. But I'm just like, I don't know how to solve this. I don't have the patience. And she's like, I got this. I remember the first time we were on a call negotiating with a contracting officer from the government. And it's very transactional. They ask a question. Nobody cares about the why. It's just give me an answer. And I want to tell stories. Person asks a question and I'm, it's over the phone, no screen. And I'm like animated. I'm like, oh, and she's just, I got this. She gives an answer. Person checks the box and moves on. And I'm like, what did you do? She's, you were going to answer a question that they didn't ask and they don't care about. Just give them an answer. Yeah. So we understand how each other work.
That's cool. That's really cool. So for Christy, so Jeff is a classic visionary. I'm sure he's got lots of big ideas and bold ideas and things he wants to do. How do you hold him back when he's going somewhere that maybe is out of bounds? Like, how do you rein him in if you have to rein him in? What does that look like?
He does have a lot of ideas, but it's good. Yeah, I do like to entertain where they could take us, right? I think reining them in is more of a, it's more of like the reality check of what can we do now? What's within our capability to make happen? And what would our next steps be? Yeah. And I think, and to his point before, I feel like the integrator visionary is a spectrum of skills. And I think there's a fair amount of overlap in the middle between him and I. And that's where the baton pass happens. Mm-hmm. Because I think where, regardless of where you are in an organization, you have to understand that there's a vision for each group, each functional area, and there's a process and procedure and set of steps that need to happen to execute. Us being able to work hand in hand with that vision and execution at the top level and really communicate that down to everyone within the organization has worked well. So yeah, I think it's more about just grounding ourselves and saying what's important, what do we need to prioritize? But then it's fun to think about everything else.
Yes. And I think certainly, as you made a point, there's a touch of integrator in Jeff. There's a touch of visionary in you. And I think perhaps that's part of what allows really good quality communication flow too, or enables it. I know the integrator on my team asked a very simple question to shut me down. Is, okay, so where does this fit on the priority list? And my answer is, of course, everything now, right now, all at the same time. Well, that's not reasonable, is it? I'm like, no, I guess not. So we have to prioritize. So I have to wait.
Yeah, but, and I think we've, going back to that gentleman who said, I want to invest in you, I get these questions of, how did you get here? Or why are you doing this? And some people that I look up to and respect that I would say are much more accomplished than me come here and go, oh my God, this is like a unicorn. And I appreciate that. where, I don't know, it's, I think a lot of where I came from as the visionary piece is I had parents and grandparents that were the quintessential, we believe in you, we will invest in you, take risks. And I didn't have any competition. I'm an only child. But I've seen firsthand that we're doing things here, or I've been given the opportunity to do things where people say, how the hell did that ever happen? That's not real. Now, I think that is one of my whys of why I do this is because we've had the opportunity and are doing things that are so diverse, so interesting, so rewarding, and have a real impact at a quality of life societal level. That's what keeps me going. And I think that's what attracts the team here. I used to think it was, I'm the sales guy full of BS. Somebody says, can we do this? Yeah, we could do this, right? But there's a fine line between hallucinating and actually saying, I've got vision, it's under control, I can do this. And that only, the difference there is whether you can execute and deliver. So I'm going to say the execution part is very much grounded to like being an integrator. But I see a lot of folks that I don't consider myself a classical serial entrepreneur. I don't have any issues taking risks in this business. But my buddies joke with me that if I were ever to sell this, I'm just going to create the same thing all over again because that's what I know how to do. I'm not going to go and get into real estate or own a horse. But I guess what I think is so amazing about where we live in the United States, like the United States, is to go from nothing, right? To go without seed money. We had seed support, but without seed money, without nepotism, might be friends, but it wasn't like nepotism. It was all earned. You can go from a guy in his basement to doing very bespoke things for very big logos. And that is the magic of being an entrepreneur and what can happen in the United States. I think that's why people came to the United States, for that hope and dream of limitless boundaries.
Yeah, that's cool. Do the new people that come on board, do you share with them the journey of Jack Twill? Do they know, like, the humble origins?
I do. We, at our last state of the company, we broke into two pieces. The first half of it was, here was up to this point in time. Here's where this came from. And usually a few times a year, we get invited to speak about career paths, where we go usually speak to students. And Christy has a more typical get a job, work for a big company, grow up the ranks. I, at a school, worked for a small business, still a small business. And I really like small business. I really like them wearing multiple hats. I like seeing how all the processes and people and things move behind the scenes. You don't get to see that in a large business. So we go and we talk on that, these different career journeys, and we ended up in the same spot.
Cool. So driving all of this remarkable work that you're doing for big logos is a core process that you've defined, and you call it AIM, the Accelerated Innovation Methodology. Mm-hmm. Talk about that for a moment and how you see that maybe evolving as new technology comes to bear, as AI comes to bear in your industry, as it's permeated so many others, and as well as the leaps that the digital prototyping is making and the like. So how do you see that core process holding firm or evolving as time marches ahead and we see these new technologies taking shape? You want to take that one, Christy?
I guess just the origins of AIM. It was, again, meant to bring our team together in terms of vocabulary and how we talk about how we're working together and how we're working with our customers, and to help educate our customers on our process and how we work. Because a lot of times customers will come to us with, I've got this idea or this sketch and I want to make a part, and they don't really understand what goes into actually having a viable prototype and maybe the iterations that need to happen along the way, or the how important requirements are from the beginning. So it was meant as an education tool, both internally but also externally with our customers. And so we've really used that and aligned our internal processes just to work in that vocabulary. So we're all speaking the same words to each other and to the outside team. And it's been helpful, right? We've put together some internal presentations and it worked it into our regular communications with our customers. I do see, and if you want to talk a little about AI and how we're trying to integrate that into the process, but the business as a whole, I think AI is going to be really unlock a lot of capabilities and different way of doing things and communicating both internally and externally. But it provides, it's exciting to think of how we can integrate it. And we're really just starting to explore all the different avenues where it may be helpful. Individuals are using it on the team, but I think where we're really going to gain some momentum is when we can make and provide the team with a uniform, consistent means to really leverage it in their day-to-day tasks.
I had an interesting discussion yesterday with one of the product teams here, where this is primarily an engineering job shop, right? But we want to continue to diversify. In addition to the engineering, we do some bespoke contract manufacturing, and to get three legs on a stool, have some products that can fit the skill level of our team that we can add to it as an OEM for certain products. And one of the products, so when you go to develop hardware, whatever you think it's going to take, just 10x, it's unbelievably expensive. And we got through the first gate of a hardware development. This is internally funded. And I asked the team to prepare the proposal of what is the phase from minimum viable prototype to our first initial production run. And the team came back with a very detailed estimate. And I didn't like the number. This is a lot of money. I think in my mind that everything is faster, cheaper. This could just be I'm getting old. So I went into AI and I gave it the most minimum prompt. So this is a paid version. It's mining my thoughts. We've got a shared thing that we can pass our thoughts on to our girls. The collective wisdom, right? Because that's what this is, right? You can move wisdom multi-generationally. Yeah. That's amazing. So I prompted it with the minimum amount of information to generate a proposal for what my team gave me. It was very similar to what my team gave me. The team labored over all this work breakdown structure, and it generated it in 30 seconds. And for all intents and purposes, it was the same number and the same process. Okay. So a couple things. Where do we go from here? So I actually, in a meeting, I basically was like, you guys are amazing, or you plagiarized this. And I don't really care. I just want to know what was leveraged. And one guy says, I did not use AI at all. I said, I believe you. I'm not upset. I said, but here's the thing. And this is where you couple artificial intelligence with real intelligence. Is I said to my team, great, you have a plausible solution. It's not good enough anymore. Because if your solution is the same solution that is now commonly understood by artificial intelligence, you're not pushing hard enough. So artificial intelligence we're going to push ourselves, right? And I said, don't tell me that your information is right because you fact-checked it against artificial intelligence. Now we're in like an echo chamber, because artificial intelligence baselined its knowledge off of what we fed it, right? Just where we're using it, we're using it all over the place. We're working on a cohesive enterprise-wide model. We've got 20, there's a poster back here, at least 5,000 DoD projects as of 4 years ago when we made that poster. Imagine if you could index all of those projects, roses and thorns, all of that knowledge, and put it on a model and build upon that for the next generation, for the next team, right? that's where we're going to end up going. Because if any business isn't going there, you have the collective wisdom of all these teams, all these people at keystrokes.
Yeah. So it's coming. It's here in the building.
Yeah, it's here. But I don't think people think of it as an employee or business, if I go up and say, AI told me to do this, is what I'm doing, where's the competitive advantage? Mm. This is going to accelerate very quickly.
Yeah. And prompt them to, no pun intended, prompt better. Because it's really, the way we view it is, it's the equivalent of if you gave me as a birthday gift a big set of crafting tools, be that big, pretty red box. And I'd look at it and I'd point to, there's my tools. But don't ask me to do anything with them because I'm not very good at it. However, if you gave the same box to a craftsman who'd been in the trades for 25 years, I bet they'd know what to do with it. And they'd probably do something pretty cool. So that's the way we see it. It's really, what can you do within the hands of a trained expert who knows whatever the task might be, whether it be engineering or marketing or something or manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And they should be more handy with their prompts than I could be, mm-hmm, in the same questions.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't ask them.
And to your point, that's where we have the opportunity to really enhance that AIM process,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Is to use that collective knowledge that we had, those roses and thorns, to feed those initial requirements and to feed the project path that we build for each individual project. So it could be very powerful.
Yeah. And even down the road with all of that knowledge base to say, how do we know when a project's going off the rails? Mm-hmm. But at that point, it should know, hey, you're out of bounds here.
Cool. Exactly.
Okay. Good to know. That's interesting. Let's talk about Jack Tool as a brand for a moment. And Jeff used the term unicorn a few times, and I thought that was interesting. But obviously, the company has made a great reputation for itself for solving some very complex challenges, and it seems like the stakes of the game keep going higher, bigger engagements, bigger challenges, bigger opportunities. So how do you communicate that in a way that resonates with the next generation of future Jack Tool customers? What do you say when you say, what is it about Jack Tool that makes it that unicorn experience, if you will?
It's evolving. The best way that I communicate it is I listen to different key opinion leaders that come here and describe it in their own words. And every time I hear somebody describe it to me, I'm like, there's a new angle to how this is interpreted. How do you, and this is so difficult because we're not offering a core product, right? This is engineering, manufacturing as a service, but what differentiates you, right? Mm-hmm. And how much differentiation do you need to be different or successful or a unicorn? Conversation we had with a large aerospace company who was here 2 weeks ago, is the director of procurement says to me, I understand what you guys want. You want really difficult stuff. And I said, yeah. And I said, because I've got talented people. I live in New Jersey. And if it's not difficult, I don't know how to provide, I don't know how to help my team earn what they want to earn without the most challenging things. I saw initially that when I was taking calculated risks with my customers, when it was really just myself, I could manage the risk and help the engineers take risks too, but controllably, and get to a new level of success. It was almost like phone rings, can you help me do this? No, but I can help you do this, and we could go that way and this way. And then there was enough of a track record of we'll call it mutually beneficial success, where, so it's very difficult to, okay, I say to people when they walk into manufacturing, please don't insult me. Don't call this a machine shop. It's a joke. Is it machines in a shop? Yeah. Is the intent different than most tools in a room? Absolutely. But the brand, that's where this came from. The brand is, it's been very difficult to differentiate because to the untrained eye, oh, I got a bunch of CAD boxes and you got a bunch of mills and you do stuff and it's stuff, right? But when you get to that very, we'll say very restricted, very challenging, whether it's regulatory or communication, that's where we differentiate. And honestly, that's where we've worked together to help identify the brand, and it's an evolving thing. And so there is a lot of bonding and rapport that goes into identifying our customers. I tell my team, I tell my customers, the logos that we're working for, and with all due respect, big logo companies, we're working for the people behind those logos. We're looking for people that are like-minded. And when they move from one logo to the next, we're following those people because we want to have mutually success together because they're so hard to find. So I'm going to say when somebody comes in here and says, I get it, I know what you do, they're the ideal client profile and they get the brand. If they don't understand it, I don't think this is like the 80-20 thing. If I need to beat the brand to death for you to see the uniqueness of what we're trying to do, you're not the right fit. And that's said with respect, is you don't need what we're offering.
A very good point, Sen. I get that. So as we look to the future, and I'll ask Christine, what's exciting you right now about as you look out to Jagtool 2035, the next 10 years, what are some things that you see out there that are exciting you and inspiring you right now?
I think we spoke a little bit to AI, leveraging that in our process and getting the team to really grasp what capabilities that will unlock. I think that's very exciting. Also to see the team continue to grow and extend themselves within their own particular skill and craft and see the pollination between groups within them. As our team grows, so does the capabilities of Jagtool and the, I guess, collective knowledge that we have to build upon. At the same time, as we gain new customers, they drive our interest into different directions, project-based, but each of those projects is an opportunity to learn more and to gain additional expertise that the team as a at large can leverage and offer to other customers, just in the sense of problem-solving skills and developing those techniques and the team dynamics to drive success. I think the continuing to support our current customers, continuing to stay curious about what's out there, both technology-wise and solution-wise, and just integrating that within the team.
Cool. I love what you said about staying curious. It's such a vital attribute, certainly in this industry as in many. So, Jeff, when you look at growth in the years to come, is it a bigger, do you see a bigger, grander, larger Jagtool, or is it really growth coming from maybe curating those clients and doing more with less or more with fewer? Or is it really, I actually see a Jagtool where there's going to be multiple facilities and multi-locations, and we're going to have an installation in Europe. So when you look out at the future in terms of growth, what do you see?
Growth for me is sleeping at night.
Okay.
No, we've been growth focused, dealing with the challenges and successes that come with that. We're still deciding on what is the right scale for us. If we are a 1,000-person company, what agility are we providing to the next 1,000-person company? Mm-hmm. All of our customers are 99% of our customers are all much larger. And they look at us and say, can you do this? And you're like, that's easy. That's not a challenge. We can do that. So what I'm excited for is we are in the technology is churning faster and faster. We do a lot of work with DOD and aerospace. There's different requirements. And we're going to say a loosening of federal acquisition regulation to deliver assets to our warfighters faster, better, faster. I don't know if I'm going to say cheaper, but I think we're going to trade cost for speed and effectiveness right now. Mm-hmm. We see that with drones and AI and space, and it's a little bit sci-fi, right? There's a lot of... Look, the people that develop sci-fi, they're visionaries. Most engineers are not designers. Most engineers are not creators. They're following somebody else's vision. When you have life imitating art, it's because this was inspired by something, for right or for wrong.
Sure.
So the path is going to be challenging. It's going to be faster paced, more dynamic, more pivots. That's what we're designed to do. If we're 35 people, if we're 350, are we going to move as fast? I don't know. We're figuring it out.
Okay.
We work well when we're on site, co-located with our customer. There is nothing that does the hardware, engineering, touch points of it with, you don't, nobody's very difficult to build trust over a Zoom call. A lot easier to sit down in person and say, hey, let's have a beer. Let's work on this together. Nothing creates the bonding and rapport of long, late nights trying to solve a problem together and that trust. Right? Now, if, yeah, so as long as that's that. One of the things that I'm really excited about is we were talking off camera before while we were having lunch about the workforce in manufacturing in New Jersey. Very challenging.
Sure.
Very challenging for very high level skilled people. We've always hired, with exception, but for a good reason, and sometimes we were learning, again, roses and thorns, we've always hired engineers to work in our manufacturing area. And that was because you're trained to think and solve problems a certain way. I don't really care if you know how to make things. If you have if you have aptitude and you want to learn, we're going to get there. I need the problem solving skill set. I need the communication piece. But there's going to be a limit to the number of those folks that are in the workforce. Because we see it now where a lot of high-end manufacturing companies, they hire engineers to be technicians because the work is that technical. So what I'm looking forward to is when we're going to have a humanoid-like robot here assisting. I'm serious. It'll be super wild to have this robot walking, interacting with us, and you say, I'll see you tomorrow, and this thing's going to go all night long and solve problems.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe not too far away. Who knows?
I think it's within 5 years.
You think so? Okay, cool. Just about to wrap up here, but I wanted to ask one more question of Christy before we do. And that was, imagine if, and this is really for a lot of our listeners, some of them are in family business, some of them are at the crossroads. So if there was a listener who's at the crossroads who's saying, my wife and I are thinking about going into business together, we're not sure, what piece of advice might you give them?
I'd make sure they've got a good support network outside of the business, so they both have someone to talk to that they can maybe can kind of work as an interpreter between them if things got difficult. And just align their goals, right? They both have, we spoke earlier about values and different roles that we play inside a business and outside a business, you know, relationship. And if those values are aligned, if those roles are set up so that they're not stepping on each other's toes, because that's, you got to look for those places of friction, and you're going to have more friction if those roles and responsibilities aren't clear. So if you go into it with an understanding of who is responsible for different needs of the business, I think that will make things a lot easier. Yeah, and it has to be a passion for both of them. I think it can be a very rewarding experience, especially if you're both focused on each other and the success of each other. And I'll say it comes back to that as well. You got to understand that you're a team. You always have your partner's best interest in mind. You're there to make each other look good inside and outside the office. I think if you can take a step back and find that common vision, that common perspective, then it's worth jumping into.
Nice. Wow. You just delivered a lot in that statement. My goodness.
I knew it was a lot of...
but a lot of a tremendous takeaway in terms of, hey, predefine some things. Don't just jump in and do it because you love it, not because it's duty-bound. And we've seen so much of that where you'll see a lot of times it's the next generation stepping in because they feel it's their responsibility or their duty or they have to help. But maybe they don't love it. So I think if I heard you right, you said, hey, you both better be passionate about it. You both better love it or else it might not go so well.
Mm-hmm. And then there's easier things to do.
For sure. Last question. If one of our leaders was really interested in learning more about either the two of you or more about what Jack Tool does here on a day-to-day, what's the best way for them to connect, Jeff?
Reach out through the website or give us a call.
Okay.
We're both on LinkedIn.
Okay. Find you on LinkedIn. Or the website. Sounds good. Jeff, Christy, thank you so much for joining us today. Your story was inspiring. It's very clear you're a power couple. You're doing awesome things here at Jack Tool and have a tremendous relationship, one that's founded on trust, communication, honesty, and a lot of hard work. So again, I've been sitting with Jeff Kinsberg and Christy Richards of Jack Tool, and I'm Ed DeLia. I'm your host, and this was Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you, Ed.
Awesome. Thanks. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at deleonet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.